Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to New Books in Language. Today I'm talking to Prakash Mondal about Language, Mind, and Computation, in which the author sets out to explore and clarify some of the foundational issues in linguistic theory. In this interview, we discuss the general aims of the project he's undertaking and its analogy to the exploration of the logical underpinnings of other disciplines such as mathematics. Today I'm talking to Prakash Mondal. Welcome to New Books in Language. Today I'm talking to Prakash Mondal about Language, Mind, and Computation, in which the author sets out to explore and clarify some of the foundational issues in linguistic theory. In this interview, we discuss the general aims of the project he's undertaking and its analogy to the exploration of the logical underpinnings of other disciplines such as mathematics.
Today I'm talking to Prakash Mondal about his book Language, Mind and Computation, in which he explores and critiques some of the foundational assumptions of modern linguistic theory. Prakash, what motivated you to write this book?
Thank you, Chris, for this opportunity. There are a few things that I would like to mention here. When I was an undergraduate student, let's say 10 years back, when I landed upon Chomsky's syntactic structures, I got something extremely attractive about modern linguistic theory, which was delineated in formal details in a tiny book. And then when I read aspects of the theory of syntax, I found the theory far more attractive, and then it appealed to me so much that I thought I would be a generative linguist. But as I moved forward over the years and studied more and more and tried to understand more of generative grammar as such, there was something that seemed to me extremely wrong and fundamentally disturbing, something which is innocuously taken for granted in the whole of generative grammar. And then I wanted to understand what kind of criticisms have already been in vogue or have already been placed in the intellectual arena of intellectual thinking. And then when I looked upon different criticisms of the generative grammar, roughly speaking, I found three important lines of critique. These are psycholinguistic critiques, and then critiques which pertain to syntax per se, for example. And the third line of critique is mainly computational or mathematical. So when I first looked at, let's say, the theoretical critique, the critique that pertained to syntax per se, what I found is that most of the critiques that have been in the market so far have critiqued the Chomskyan position in the sense that they have said it is the interface between syntax and semantics that has not been properly addressed, because semantics has been just pushed into the background by not incorporating semantics as part of the theory of generative grammar. And it was part of the critique that also resisted the throwing away of generative semantics in the history of generative linguistics. So part of the critique in the theoretical linguistics tradition concentrated on insisting that the semantic component is important for any syntactic theory, and it should be incorporated in mainstream theoretical linguistics. And the exercising of the ghost of generative semantics must have been a severe folly, a kind of mistake which has been committed by generative grammarians. So that's the critique from the theoretical linguistics side. But then when I looked at the psycholinguistics line of critique, most often what I found is that the critique concentrated mainly on the opposition between competence and performance, and the very idea that performance can be detached from competence chagrined many psycholinguists, and to the extent that many claim that much of competence is actually performance-based, and they cannot be divorced from each other. And finally, when I looked at the mathematical or the computational approach of criticism, what I found is that much of the work in mathematical linguistics has taken recursion within the generative tradition to be the main culprit. And most of the critique has focused on debunking the very idea that recursion is present in natural language, and then trying to throw it away from the center stage of generative grammar by trying to show that interformalism is perfectly wrong just because recursion is at the center of the theory. From another perspective, when the computational critique is viewed from a perspective in which things like the computational complexity of the generative formalism is looked upon, and in the same way when one looks at machine learning issues, especially with the formalism of generative grammar, what I see is that most of the critique has concentrated upon the problem of acquisition, especially with UG, from a machine learning perspective. And there have been some criticisms, especially by David Johnson and Shalom Lapin, who have tried to show that the entire formalism invites deeper problems of computational complexity. So what I found lacking in the entire literature is that no single theory or no single account does something like this. I mean, you accept the entire formalism with all its axioms and theorems as they exist, as they are, and then you give a free play to the entire system of formalism just to see what kind of consequences emerge from them. And once you try to figure out what kind of consequences emerge from the axioms when they are given a free play in dealing with different kinds of linguistic phenomena, the consequences might lead to something very interesting. And that's what I wanted to find out. I wanted to find out what kind of consequences, logically speaking, will derive from the acceptance of all the axioms taken for granted. And it is just to see how I can undermine the entire formalism by showing logical inconsistencies within the paradigm itself. So I thought a better way of attacking or critiquing the entire paradigm is to show that the formalism inherent in it is logically inconsistent. It's like destroying the logical core of the formalism in its base. So that's what I thought about when I went about writing this book, and that's what drove me to write this book. There's another thing that I would also like to mention. The only thing that that I find in the literature about such a tendency to pose basic questions about the formalism itself, the work in Terence Langendwin and Paul Postel's book, Vastness of Natural Language, the Vastness of Natural Language. That's the only book which I found, that demonstrates some logical problems with the formalism itself. So this is one book that also inspired me to some extent to write something of this kind. So I'd say there have been various sources from which I got the inspiration to write a book of this kind.
Yes, I mean, it's a very interesting approach and slightly unusual in as much as, I mean, my impression of the field is that most of the people who have advanced, for example, the psycholinguistic or computational critiques have at some point found themselves breaking away intellectually from the generative tradition, and relatively few people seem to have gone back and attempted to criticize it foundationally in these ways, Postel being perhaps an exception, notably.
Right.
Do you feel that these are foundational issues that we should all be grappling with, no matter what our theoretical persuasion within linguistics broadly?
Well, that's an interesting question that we should ask ourselves. I mean, linguistics as a discipline has, I think, advanced to a level where I think we now ask questions about the biology of language, the computational nature of language, and also issues about how we learned language. And that's exactly the question which I think drove Chomsky to weight the mental component to language. I mean, if you look at syntactic structures, no discussion was about the mental component. Even in aspects, there was a subtle point about, UG and also the mental representation. But until the minimalist program, we don't see anything that approaches mentalism. So once we land upon the minimalist program, we see that the mentalist conception has been fully elaborated upon in that book. And then from that onwards, the formalism, the entire formalism has been weighted to a rich mentalist position. So I feel somehow this position has got its disastrous consequences, which have been overlooked. On the one hand, there have been a conception of the human mind which has the linguistic component, which is conceptualized in terms of the language faculty. But at the same time, the notion of computation has also been attached to the particular mental component, which is part of the human mind. And when we get this trinity of the linguistic faculty, its mental instantiation, and its computational nature, I mean, in the sense that the linguistic faculty is such that it houses a kind of computational system which generates utterances, sentences, which can be taken to be strings. And largely speaking, this trinity of language, a mental instantiation, and its computational nature lead to a kind of flux of issues which, to my mind, have not caught the attention of modern theoretical linguists. Even though we have progressed a lot in our understanding of language in our empirical discoveries and in our theoretical developments, but I feel somehow unless we address the fundamental issues about the trinity of connections between the language faculty, its computational nature, and its mental instantiation, the very foundations cannot be held responsible for the developments that we right now see in our empirical advances as well as theoretical developments. So somehow I feel unless we look back and look at the foundations at first, and the foundations that arose mainly with the minimalist program, which weighted computation and mentalism to the human language. So unless we look back and then see what's really wrong with the foundation itself, I think no matter how much progress we make in understanding linguistic phenomena in diverse kinds of languages, the foundations are going to be shaky, and ultimately the entire monument erected on the foundations is going to collapse.
You draw the analogy sort of both theoretically and to a certain extent methodologically with the foundational work on the axiomatization of mathematics from the 20th century. Right. And methods rather analogous to Gödel's, the use of Gödel sentences and the proof of incompleteness theorem.
Right.
Could you summarize how you see that analogy playing out?
Well, that's a good analogy brought out by you. There was a time when Hilbert and Bertrand Russell tried to axiomatize the whole of mathematics by trying to compress the entire system of mathematics and to reduce them to just a few set of axioms which can be founded, let's say, on set theory. So that was the tradition in which the whole of mathematics was thought to be fundamentally reducible to certain axioms of set theory. So what Gödel in that context did is that he undermined the entire efforts made, which were just underway at that time. His incompleteness theorem gave a heavy blow to the entire tradition of axiomatizing the entire system of mathematics in such a way that we can't now say a system of mathematics is complete, or it can ever be axiomatized in such a manner that we can have a complete description of the entire system. So I say the same thing for the formalistic system designed for natural language, in the sense that I also feel the formal system of language that has been devised, that has been developed over the period of the last 5 or 6 decades, the efforts are, I think, parallel or in many ways orthogonal to the efforts made by different mathematical logicians in the 19th and 20th centuries. So I feel this tradition has given its roots, especially in formalizing various concepts of formal linguistics, and it has helped, of course, in understanding a lot of linguistic phenomena in compact terms, in the sense that by divorcing semantics and matters of interpretation and keeping them outside the box, we have been able to understand a lot about linguistic phenomena. But I point out that this has come at a cost. Once the formalism has become more and more complex and more elaborate, we see that the formalism has tended towards a kind of axiomatization, where we feel the axiomatization can exhaust all possible principles of natural language. But actually, this turns out to be false. False in the sense that the axioms, when they are given free play, tend to generate a number of disastrous paradoxes and logical inconsistencies within. And if that is so, no matter how compact our accounts of the linguistic phenomena are, the formalism itself crumbles in the face of linguistic phenomena. That's what I tried to show in the book.
But presumably, in this case, there should be, and indeed you sort of canvass an approach to how there might be, there should be some formalism that we could imagine that would be immune somehow from these problems, or do you think that we're essentially trying to formalize things that are unformalizable in the same sense as Gödel argued?
Okay, what Gödel tried to show is that there are some propositions, mathematical propositions, which are true, but they cannot be proved to be true within the system itself. Now, if I carry it forward to the formal system of language developed over the periods, especially within the generative tradition, what I find is that there are some valid propositions about natural language, especially natural language phenomena, or precisely about natural language grammar, which are valid, but at the same time, they cannot be probed to be computable within the putative computational machinery proposed for natural language grammar. So I say a similar thing for this system. So somehow what I feel is that any system, any formal system for natural language, if it tries to be complete, and if it tries to capture the notion of computability in its intrinsic sense, as I have defined it in the book, I'm sure such a notion of a formal system is destined to collapse. The reason is very simple. The reason is that we can, of course, have certain formalisms which don't wed computability to mentalism. For example, if you look at the kind of formalism in sign-based construction grammar, which was developed by Ivan Sack. So that kind of formalism doesn't have that problem, because the entire mentalistic approach has been developed in such a manner that the mind has been sort of detached from the formalism itself. So the formalism is at a level which is different, or maybe at a higher level than what you see, let's say in the mind. So I feel there could be formalisms which don't inherit the same problems. So I think there could be some formalisms.
Just to pursue the analogy in one more way of the development of mathematical formalism, something else that struck me is that there is a sense, we have mathematics in spite of incompleteness, that it's a problem that particularly afflicts, I speak as an outsider, but my impression is it particularly afflicts certain areas.
Yeah.
What would be the key issues of active research interest in linguistics that you feel this work is particularly undermining or particularly problematic for?
Well, if you look at the recent developments, especially in Chomsky linguistics, what you find to be remarkably evident is that people are now trying to reduce empirical adequacy along with descriptive adequacy to matters of computation. I mean, one is now talking about optimal computation and then trying to reduce the design features of language as well as different facets of empirical linguistic phenomena to the way computations operate in the language faculty. Now, I feel this assumption is fundamentally mistaken, mainly because the Turing machine in its mathematical conception itself contains its own problem. I mean, the problem that is intrinsic to it, that is the halting problem. Now, the halting problem is something like this. I mean, a Turing machine, no matter how complicated it is, can never determine or can never define an algorithm which can say another arbitrary algorithm which defines a program, that program will terminate in a reasonable amount of time. So even if we define an algorithm based on the notion of Turing machine, we cannot have a definition of an algorithm that can tell us that there will be a program that will terminate in a reasonable amount of time. Now, if we try to carry over the notion of computation, we must also inherit the halting problem that is intrinsic to any Turing machine. So now when one does so, one also invites the problem of the halting problem. And so far as I have observed, the mainstream formalist brand of linguistics has never tried to grapple with this problem. This is more so because in modern, especially in recent formulations, I see that some people have also tried to say the language faculty is itself a version of the Turing machine. And there have been such formulations, although Chomsky doesn't explicitly say so, but even if he says the language faculty is a computing device, it computes, so no matter what commitment he has to the kind of computational view he advocates, he has to have a conception of the Turing machine, especially when he says the language faculty computes. So I feel any description that takes the linguistic system to be a computing device while being a mental system in the first place is bound to get into severe trouble. So this is what I think.
Just to amplify that point, when we talk about, my impression is when people talk rather casually about such and such being a computing device, they're often rather uncommitted as to precisely what they mean by that. But that's not a defense that you think applies in any meaningful sense to this literature. Am I right?
Yes. If you look at Chomsky's writings, so far as I think, Chomsky has always defended a view of computation that is more in tune with the abstract logical notion of computation, which has been developed by people like Emily Post, Alan de Church, and people like even Kurt Gödel. He doesn't, strictly speaking, adopt the notion of Turing machines in its proper form, while it is also true that the abstract notion of computation is perfectly compatible, or in fact, in many ways, equivalent to the Turing machine view of computation, which is a dynamic view of computation. So Insofar as the two views are compatible and, in fact, in many ways equivalent to each other, even if one doesn't make any commitment to the view of computation in terms of Turing machines, one must have to embrace the problems that are inherent to computation as such, no matter whether one adopts the abstract view of computation or the dynamic view of computation as implicit in the notion of Turing machines. So that's what I think.
Yeah. Is it the case that researchers in syntax have ignored this question, or have they not been aware of it, or do you feel they've merely underestimated the foundational importance of it?
Well, I'd not exactly say so, because I feel there have been some precedent accounts in which I see some glimmerings of such criticisms, especially in, as I said, the book The Vastness of Natural Language, written by Terence Langendwin and Paul Postel. There they have tried to debunk the very idea that natural language grammar, I mean the formal system, is a constructed system, so it is not equivalent to Turing machines. It must be more powerful than Turing machines. The other idea that is much earlier, of course, can be found in a person called Esa Itkonen. So I think he was one of the first persons to notice some fundamental problems with the axiomatic system itself. I mean, the axiomatic system that has been developed in Chomsky. So I feel somehow there have been some works which have noticed this problem in places. But so far as I see, no works so till date has provided a detailed critique of the very basis of the axioms, and by giving them free play, that is by accepting all the axioms with all their constraints, and then saying, well, I accept all the axioms of the theory of the system, and then see how they turn out to work in dealing with natural language phenomena. So ultimately, I feel it's not that people have not noticed it at all. There have been people who have noticed it, but yes, nobody, to my knowledge, has provided a detailed critique by showing internal logical consistencies, by connecting them to linguistic phenomena in detail. So that's what I think.
It's also my impression that that area of the field has been somewhat prone to dispute and hostility rather than cooperation. Do you feel that it's a difficult area in which to gain attention for problematic claims?
Well, that's a good question, I would say. This is an era when people are moving away from, questions which are just internal to linguistics or theoretical linguistics proper. One is now dealing with questions of, cognitive implementation. So one is now dealing with the questions that pertain to, cognitive science in a broader sense. So now we have entered, a period in which I think people have been debating questions concentrate or say highlight questions of learnability, questions of language acquisition, and also questions about the interface that connects syntax and semantics, and how these questions illuminate the very nature of human cognition. But in our quest for the very format that human cognition has, we have sort of moved away from questions that used to be asked, 20 or 30 years back, when people used to ask about the very fundamental basis of certain issues, which turned out to not to be peripheral to the entire enterprise. Rather, they turned out to be central to the to the very practice of the paradigm itself. But right now, I somehow personally feel that we should perhaps look back and then try to examine the fundamental axioms that we had accepted long back. And then we have just ignored those fundamental questions while trying to make a progress in our understanding of the relation between language and cognition. So I feel somehow unless we address the fundamental questions by looking back, the very notion of an interface between language and cognition will also be shrouded in mystery. So somehow, no matter how much progress we make in trying to understand the relation between language and cognition, and no matter how sophisticated or how advanced our tools, somehow we'll fall behind in trying to understand the very basis of the machinery that we have ourselves constructed in order to understand natural language grammar, and in order to understand how that system of grammar connects to the human mind. So if we resolve the puzzles that that arise from the basis itself, so unless we resolve those puzzles, I don't think we can make good progress in understanding the connection between language and language and human cognition. So somehow I feel this has a modern relevance as well. Even though these days nobody will perhaps be very interested in looking into the nitty-gritty of these fundamental issues.
Mm-hmm. Later in the book, you sketch an architecture of grammar that you suggest might resolve some of the fundamental issues that you're, those fundamental problems that you're encountering or identifying with the existing system. What are its relevant features?
Well, this architecture, as I have presented in the book, is not, strictly speaking, an alternative to, let's say, any existing architecture developed by theoretical linguists. Rather, I would say this is a kind of meta-theoretical formulation of some principles that can tell us a lot about theories of grammar. That means it is a kind of idealization of a kind of meta-theoretic view which tells us more how theories of language would look like rather than how they should not look like. So the architecture has been developed with another purpose in mind. That is, what I've said in the book is that the system of the psychological architecture of language should be divorced from an axiomatic system of language. That means when you describe the system of grammar in an axiomatic way, you have your axiomatic system on the one hand, on the other hand, you have the psychological architecture of language. So I say keep them separate because the psychological architecture is ultimately grounded in the human mind. And since it is grounded in the human mind or brain, it must have to be a finite system. So it invites all the limitations of the human brain, and we have to accept that. But at the same time, it is also true when you develop a formal system of grammar, it has certain axiomatic properties which let us express some infinitary concepts of language. So infinitary expressions, infinitary extensions in linguistic phenomena. So when we develop an axiomatic system, we find the problem of infinite extension, because any axiomatic system can lead to infinite extensions. But that's something which cannot be, strictly speaking, be made compatible with a finite system. So that's why I have argued in the book, these two systems must be kept separate. And the architecture that has been delineated in the book is just a guide to the outline of such an architecture, and on the other hand, it is designed to show how the properties of the psychological architecture of language can be fully translated into, let's say, some meta-theoretical principles, axioms, and constraints of grammar in a general sense. So what I've tried to do here is that you take the psychological architecture of language and you try to translate the mechanisms of the language in your axiomatic system. And you do it in such a manner that there will be kind of a translation and transparency between the two systems. And this translational transparency, as I've argued, is achieved because of something called our intentional projection, the way we project intentionality to various things. And these things could be abstract entities or even concrete entities out there in the world. So what I've tried to show here is that once you have developed a formal system, the formal system must have to be somehow related to the psychological architecture of language and vice versa. And that architecture developed is just to show how that translation can be achieved by showing that there exists a kind of transparency between these two systems. So that's what I've tried to do.
Could you elaborate a bit on that? You mentioned that the notion of intentionality. How do you see that?
Well, that's a good question. In the book, I haven't actually provided a completely detailed account of how intentionality does help us in, let's say, projecting the psychological architecture to the higher descriptive level where we developed the axiomatic system of language. So what I've argued in brief is that there's intentionality whereby whereby our mental states are directed at certain things, and these things could be either in our own mind or maybe outside in the world. So I say it is the directedness of intentionality which has been missing in the linguistic theory. And I say it is this intentionality which helps project the psychological architecture to a higher level of description where we have the axiomatic system. On the other hand, it also helps ground the axiomatic system in the mind. I'll try to explain this with one example from, let's say, the system of arithmetic. Suppose you have an intentional with S description of, let's say, the set of all odd numbers, right? So once we have an intentional description of the set of odd number, we'll say, well, the set contains members with the variable x, such that x cannot be divided by 2. Now, this is an intentional description, and we know that once we try to find out its extension, the extension will be infinite, because the set of all possible odd numbers will, of course, be infinite. Now, the point is that this description is something that has to be ultimately grounded in the mind, because it is the mind that ultimately takes part in the projection of this infinite extension. So I say the same thing here. I say once you have the axiomatic system which can allow for infinite extensions, you face the problem of grounding it in the mind. So I say that grounding is possible only when you have intentionality in place. So once you have intentionality which gives you directedness of mental states towards certain things, which could be mental or non-mental, you sort of solve the problem of projection, mental projection. So it is intentional projection which helps the psychological architecture of language to project the axiomatic system to its infinite extension. I hope it's intelligible.
I think so. Yes. Thank you. Turning back to the status of your model as a meta-theoretical construct, how do you see that being used? Is that something that you feel should be or might be useful as a guideline for theories, or as a tool of evaluation of theories, or something else?
That's a relevant question here. So what I thought here is that the guidelines proposed and formulated in the meta-theoretical architecture that that has been formalized in rough details. So what I've thought here is that it can provide guidelines to how we actually make, formal theories of language. I mean, when we actually go about making formal theories of language, we pay attention to certain things like, let's say when I'm developing a formal system of language, so I have to pay attention to a few things. That is, does the system import the notion of computability? The first question that would, of course, arise here. The second question, how would such a system be related to the mind? The third question, how would such a system be able to account for, let's say, linguistic data? That's why you also invite the question of explanation. So ultimately, the entire formulation will provide, in my conception, guidelines to how one could answer the questions I just raised. So somehow I feel this can answer questions to how language at all can be related to the human mind, how language, a formal theory of language can resolve issues which crop up in connection with computability or computations per se, and also how such a formal theory will be able to achieve a kind of descriptive adequacy by being able to account for different kinds of linguistic phenomena. So ultimately, it has to achieve a kind of descriptive and also explanatory power as well. So that's what I think.
From the point of view of people working within existing theoretical frameworks, is this something that calls for radical foundational upheaval, or is this something that can be in some sense taken into consideration when developing those systems? I mean, how do you see, for your preference, how would you like to see this theoretical discipline evolving?
Well, I think linguistics has, as a discipline, I mean, especially theoretical linguistics, has made progress to the extent that it can pose various questions about, let's say, the computational nature of language learning, the computational nature of, let's say, natural language grammar, the nature of the mental component called the language faculty in the mind, and how it operates, how it interfaces with the other domains of cognition in the human mind. So we are now beginning to realize more and more that we can resolve. Rather than resolving issues which now bother us, we can now ask questions which we were not able to ask, let's say, 30 or 40 years back. So we're now able to ask questions about, let's say, the cognitive computations that arise in connection with language. We also raise questions about the very nature of the processing mechanisms that obtain, especially when one processes language. We also ask questions about how to tie aspects of pragmatics to linguistic theory in such a manner that we can have a unified theory of both pragmatics and, let's say, semantics. And at the same time, we also are now geared up to ask questions about how to raise basic questions about the basic format of the interface that connects language to other cognitive domains such as vision, the motor system, or even other perceptual systems. So given that we are now geared up to raise various questions about the connection between language and other cognitive domains, and also the very nature of language, its statistical properties, its computational properties, its psychological implementation, and things of that sort, also its neurological instantiation. So I hope somehow we have arrived at a stage where we are in a better shape in understanding questions of relevance to modern theoretical inquiries in linguistics and also in cognitive science. And in such a context, I feel the questions of fundamental importance that I raise in the book will be far more relevant than they were before, because we now have a better grasp of the very things that we were quarreling about just, let's say, 20 or 30 years back. So we now have a better grasp of the computational nature of language learning, the computational nature of even our cognitive processing. So since we have made great strides towards such goals, I hope the questions that we can ask can become more and more complex, and the answers that we look forward to will also be, I think, far more elaborate and far more insightful. So with that hope, I think we are moving toward an era where we can ask questions which tie the fundamental questions in theoretical linguistics with questions of relevance in, let's say, computer science and of course, in cognitive science in a broader sense. So that's what I feel is important to you.
Have you found people receptive to your work thus far in the light of that disposition towards trying to sort these issues?
So far as I'm concerned, I have interacted with various people in generative grammar, including Chomsky and Kyle Johnson and people of that sort. I've also interacted with Ray Jackendub, who I have been influenced by. What I've often observed is that when one tries to raise fundamental questions about the very foundation of the entire enterprise, one often bends back and then tries to show that somehow linguistics has proceeded to a stage where such questions may not be of much importance because the advancement of ideas has taken a shape which is not ripe for such investigations. But somehow I feel I would differ with them in many ways because as I said, I think no matter how advanced our theory has become, unless we go back and just look at the philosophical foundations of the very questions that that gave rise to the very enterprise in the first place, we cannot probably be blind and just go on to do good syntax or good semantics and even good phonology. Somehow we have to deal with questions which pertain to the fundamental issues that arise from the problems emanating from the system itself. And unless we do so, I think we'll reach a stage where people will just do good linguistics, but people will not ask questions which actually gave rise to linguistics in its first place. So I think it is high time that we alter the way we look at language by re-questioning the very foundations of the theory. So overall, I feel people in the discipline have not been quite receptive to this idea that I'm trying to articulate in my work.
Nevertheless, it seems to me you're quite optimistic about the future of the discipline.
Yes. I mean, in a sense, as I said, we are in an era where we are now talking about the Internet of Things. We are talking about various kinds of computations, which extend beyond our familiar domain. So we are entered an age where we can ask various questions about cognition, which we are not able to even ask. So, and even linguistics as a discipline in its theoretical form has also gone beyond the very debates that centered upon, let's say, the syntax versus semantics controversy, the pragmatics versus semantics controversy, and also the UG versus non-UG conceptions of language learning. So I think we are moving away and we are also going beyond all such distinctions. And so in an era where we are just obliterating such distinctions, it is high time that we look back and then we try to figure out how the foundations really work out. So, I mean, I strongly feel we should examine the foundational questions and then relook at the issues that gave rise to the enterprise when Chomsky himself decimated behaviorism in toto and then ushered in an era of cognitivism. So since we are living in an era where we are also raising questions about the enacted or embodied conceptions of the human mind, I think we should now look at various aspects of the axiomatic system, which has been developed over the period by various people in its various avatars. So somehow, unless we examine the various aspects and facets of different axiomatic systems that have been developed so far, it would seem that we are developing a lot in our understanding of various empirical phenomena without really questioning the very very system which sort of buttresses various kinds of descriptions of linguistic phenomena. So somehow I am hopeful, I'm also optimistic about it. So I feel such questions will prove to be conducive to theoretical developments in future. At the same time, it would also help understand the very nature of language in its intrinsic sense, because especially with the advent of Noam Chomsky in generative grammar, we have come to raise questions about the very nature of language in its intrinsic sense. And this is something which we were not able to ask, let's say, 50 or 60 years back. So if that is the case, so this book tries to make a step forward to that goal and then says, well, why not try to dig deeper into the intrinsic nature of language itself by trying to see whether it is computational in its intrinsic sense and at the same time mental at all. So, but the conclusion that I have reached is that no natural language grammar or no system, no formal system of grammar can be intrinsically mental and computational at the same time. So such questions, I would say, are still relevant to modern linguistics. So they are still relevant in our present day context. So that's what I feel here.
Yeah, our time is nearly up. I'd like to conclude by asking you what your own future plans are. What are you working on at the moment?
Right now, I'm working on another book which tries to show that biological grounding is unnecessary for natural language grammar, in the sense that it doesn't help us in understanding the very nature of human cognition. That means, to understand the very nature or the basic format of human cognition, we don't need to go via biology to human cognition. Natural language has enough complexity in itself. I mean, I'd say it has enough logical complexity in itself, which can illuminate the very texture of human cognition. So this is what I'm trying to argue in my recent book that I'm working on right now.
Well, I very much look forward to it, and I'm sure it'll find a fascinated audience. For now, let me say, Prakash Mondal, many thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you a lot.
I've been talking to Prakash Mondal about language, mind and computation. This is Chris Cummins for New Books in Language, saying thank you for listening.